This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Before the jury ever decides whether Corey Richens murdered her husband, they've already learned a lot about who she is. Her phone showed searches for fentanyl poisoning, how to delete iPhone messages moments after first responders left the house where Eric lay dead. Her phone was used to access deleted memes. One caption, "I'm really rich." She allegedly wrote a letter from jail coaching her family on what to say, the walk the dog letter. That's been introduced now too. A handwriting expert says Eric probably didn't sign his own life insurance policies. 3 days after his death, she was texting about more drugs. Eric Faddis is with us to help us break this all down. Eric, when the defendant has a documented pattern of deception, which they have laid out pretty well here, lying to friends, allegedly coaching witnesses from jail. I mean, she stole roughly $45,000 from a friend for a real estate investment. It was supposed to go over here. It went to Corey's debts. And her friend was just out of luck with that. It paints a really damning picture of someone who really doesn't have a lot of care for other people other than themselves. It doesn't necessarily make someone a murderer, but it really shows what is at the core of their character. How is all of this at the end of the day going to play out in a jury's mind? Is it direct evidence of guilt, or does it mainly hurt her if she actually takes the stand, knowing what her past track record has been with others in this planet?
You know, Tony, there's this legal fixer that judges impose in trials, whereby they presume that the jury is going to follow all the jury instructions. Those instructions in part state that, hey, you've got to base your decision on the evidence, not on how you feel about somebody, whether you like somebody or not. But that's not real. That's a fiction. That's not how human beings operate. And so, the jury is going to look at that. And some folks are going to say, gosh, you know, if her character is so shitty and deceptive and manipulative, does that mean she has the capacity to pull this off? Does that mean that she's the type of person who could actually poison their husband and try to get away with it? And I think that's a real problem for the defense. And it's hard to neutralize that, but that is going to be playing in those jurors' minds, whether that's legally appropriate or not.
You know, we don't know what defense is going to do, and, you know, at least we don't know what the witnesses are going to pull. What would be the ideal witness you think they could pull from Corey's life, and what could they potentially say that could offset or at least, you know, put a wedge in that thought process of her just being this horrendous, manipulative person that's taken advantage of all these people?
You know,
conjecture, hypothetical one.
One thing they could consider, Robin. So, Corey Richens' credibility has been attacked. The fact, you know, it's been shown by the prosecution allegedly she's deceptive, manipulative, that kind of thing. So I think the defense would be entitled to put on some character witnesses as to her character for honesty. And so, you know, they could garner people throughout her life, personally, professionally, family members, co-workers, friends, neighbors, things like that, where Corey Richens was a stand-up person and where she was true to her word and where she was consistent in her statements and her behavior. And so I think that they could do some damage control in that aspect, but that assumes you can find such witnesses and they could testify to that truthfully. And that can be a bigger ask than perhaps one might perceive.
Yeah. Have you seen cases where you've had such a preponderance of negative things towards a client and they were actually able to counter for the jury through character witnesses and overcome that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, for example, the homicide case that I did not too long ago, they were saying that my client was violent. And so we put on a bunch of witnesses as to his reputation for peacefulness. And we were able to sort of overcome these harsh allegations by saying, no, you know, look at the people closest to this person. They know this individual's character. They're giving you examples in real life from years ago that occurred before any of this alleged court case was going on. So it wasn't like to try to improve their position or anything in the court case. And so, yeah, there are ways to neutralize it, but it takes a lot of planning, a lot of investigation.
It'll be interesting because even like Lori DeBellavallo, they were completely unable to bring these types of people to court because she was just, and I know one of our listeners has to take a drink now, a nutter.
Nothing like getting drunk before noon, you know?
Because they take a shot every time I say Nutter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and some judges are cautious about letting in that type of character witness. In fact, I've had trials where I've been limited in the number of such witnesses I could put on.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's kind of a delicate dance. You got to pick your best heavy hitters and try to show the jury the whole person whom they're evaluating.
How damning is the walk the dog letter? They just introduced it. They've seen it now. The jury has gone through it. The explanation that the defense is giving it is, you know, it was a manuscript to a larger 68-page novel. 68-page novel. You know, about it was character development, even though it's like clearly a letter to her mom saying, hey, tell this person to say this, tell this person to do. I mean, I don't really know how you, other than just speaking the words aloud, saying it's a novel, it translates into that. I mean, you might as well say it's a watercolor drawing. Like, I'm no, sorry. It's clearly it's words on a sheet. Six sheets, actually, that say that. But it's a watercolor. No, it's not a watercolor. Just like it's not a novel. I don't think the jury's going to buy that it was part of a novel. What else can they do to explain this thing away? And will they be able to?
I think as defense, you've got to kind of own some of your weaknesses. And you might get up there in closing and say something like, you know, they've proven that Corey Richens has terrible judgment. She has terrible judgment. She's sort of unwieldy. She's not thinking these things through. She's an artist and an author, and she's eccentric, and she's making all these weird calls. But she's not on trial for making weird calls. She's not on trial for having bad judgment, and she's not on trial for being bad with money. That's arguable. But I think you kind of go down that route that, hey, this is some sort of, you know, flustered, eccentric person going through some crazy life stuff, and that's not the same as witness tampering or something along those lines. That's one way to play it.
it's funny, Tony, as you're saying that, it's like character development. The only image that popped in my mind is that, you know, the next scheme that she's going to try to do is personal development coach or Corey
Richens.
Yeah,
she'll be a life coach.
coach Corey Richens.
While selling Amway. I mean, I'm waiting for like the defense to get up there. And by the way, have you heard about this product that can change your life? Corey's going to like show up in a pink Cadillac. She'll be selling Mary Kay.
Like Mark's defense there, my client's an idiot.
It's gone up there like, look, I don't know what the hell she was doing. All valid arguments, Eric. She could do this, they could do that, but I just don't see any of them landing. I don't think you have a way to land that thing. It was never intended to be seen to begin with, and obviously it has been. It's not part of a book. It's damning. It's very damning. But we'll see how that plays with the jury. Another damning thing is her search history. Fentanyl poisoning before they even really knew much about it being fentanyl. How to delete iPhone messages. Death benefit insurance payouts. Some of it can be explained away. Because if your partner died and, you know, you want to get the insurance money you are entitled to, yeah, you're going to look those sort of things up. If you're not familiar with how that works, though, some can be argued as legitimate. But how damning do you think her search history is as compared to some of the other cases that we've seen with, you know, very, very damning search histories, like about dismembering bodies and things of that nature?
You know, it's of course problematic. And if I'm the prosecutor in that, I'm saying, you know, hey, look, let's look at this one search. Okay, this can be interpreted multiple ways, seems suspect, but it's one search. Well, let's look at another search. Well, let's look at a third search. Let's look at a fourth search. And now let's turn to forging documents on forging financial documents to try to benefit from the death of your husband. Now let's look towards witness tampering. Now let's look towards, you know, you build and build and build and say, hey, even if we take these things in isolation, and there might be multiple reasonable interpretations. When you look at the totality of these things all together, it reeks of guilt. And I think that's how the prosecution's going to style it.
Out of all those things, there's such a preponderance of communication that is not benefiting her whatsoever. You know, what are some ideas that you would have as defense or that you'd be advising them on now? Like, what would you do to kind of counter some of those things?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it would be prudent to put Corey on the stand. That's one way. So you call your client and you have him explain it, but she would be just, crucified up there. So I don't think that's
what. Okay. So let's go down that first then there. So what would be, cause I know that's on everyone's mind. Will she take a stand or not take a stand? What do you think would be her greatest liability up there on the stand?
I think the search history, and she's got, and you know, they would go in a painstaking way through each and every search. Let's highlight this fentanyl term. Let's highlight life insurance payouts. Let's highlight, and you tell this jury how this does not relate to your husband dying of a fentanyl overdose and you getting paid insurance. Like, and so it's really like you have this trained prosecutor, and then you have this just regular person on the stand who's not used to this scenario. Just being in the courtroom is nerve wracking, and sometimes it's hard to articulate well in there. And I think you would just let her hang herself on trying to explain away the search history, and then also the requests allegedly of the housekeeper for the drugs, and you just keep, you know, let her hang herself with. Tripping over her own feet, putting her foot in her mouth and screwing herself over.
Do you think she's going to take the stand? I mean, at the end of the day, Corey has a track record of thinking she's smarter than everyone else. And obviously, it's her choice at the end of the day if she wants to take the stand. Her attorneys, I'm sure, are probably saying, bad idea. Don't do this. But at the end of the day, she's the one who seems to swoop in and think she has a solution, like, you know, taking out payday loans to cover bad debts, writing a check to your housekeeper for drugs. That's another fun part of all this that we're learning is that for the drugs, she wrote a check. She wrote and made it out for cleaning, like for an exorbitant amount, which cleaning. Like clearly, if you're going to be buying your drugs and you may have killed somebody with said drugs, I don't know, a check might not be the best route of payment. I mean, it's trace it back to me. Here's a way to do it. I mean, she could have denied she ever paid it had she not written a check. But again, just Corey seems to think she has the better ideas than everyone in the room. Is there a world where Corey's going to take the stand here? And is there a way where she can navigate this? She has been able to bamboozle a lot of people in her life. Now, these weren't the brightest folks. We can give them that. Look at the housekeeper. Look at all the folks that have taken the stand that she has bamboozled. The boyfriend seems like a lovely guy. Probably not the sharpest crayon in the box, though, either. So she's selective at who she's able to bamboozle, because I think it requires a certain IQ level to be bamboozled by Corey Richens. But I don't think Corey realizes what that number is in terms of IQ. I think she just thinks the world takes whatever she says and eats it out of her hand. What do you think? Is there a world where she can take the stand here and turn this jury around into her favor?
You know, in the comments, Gen Z thinks she will. And I think there's a reasonable possibility of that. She seems like the type of unwieldy client who is prone to impulsive conduct and is also detached from reality, doesn't realize how her conduct is going to be perceived by other people. Yeah. And so I could see her attorneys are like, whoa, 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 you don't need to do this. And I don't think she needs to do it to win. And she might say, you know what, I'm going to tell my story. This is my right. We saw an audacious move by her in sending that letter to her mother. Every jail inmate knows that your correspondence is in and out of jail are going to be monitored. Someone's going to look at this. She did it anyway, sort of in a detached way, probably not foreseeing the damning interpretation that people are going to have from that. Could that same feeling motivate her to take the stand? Very well could.
You know, Eric, you said an interesting statement in there, and that was, you don't think she needs to do that to win. What do you think she needs to do to win?
Yeah, you know, it's not like a self-defense case where oftentimes, you know, the question is whether there was a reasonable fear of imminent bodily harm. Sometimes the defendant has to get up there and say, hey, I was scared for these reasons. That's not the defense here. The defense here is essentially that I think that Eric Richens either accidentally overdosed or committed suicide or something like that. And so I think what they need to do is continue to show any evidence that they have of Eric Richens's drug use, his proximity to drugs, that kind of thing. And I'm not saying such evidence exists, but if it does, I think that's sort of the seed they have to plant in the minds of the jury. And you can do that without Corey taking the stand.
And Tony, I'm just going to add a little bit to what you're saying about the poor mopes in her life. I think there's a lot of good people. She just had a very, very powerful skill set over them. And what happens with every human being is when you have someone that is so toxic like her, like Corey, they're very, very adept at finding your trigger, finding your lever. And I think that, you know.
No. Robin, I didn't think we lost Robin for a moment there. It's very interesting to look at the folks that Corey bamboozled, because a lot of folks are like, oh, this couldn't happen to me. There's no way that this could happen to me. I couldn't be bamboozled by somebody like this. But people are bamboozled by folks like this every day, especially someone like Corey Richens. Because, just look at the woman. This is not the person that you think is capable of this list of things that she's accused of. I mean, it's pretty damning. It's pretty bad. And it's easy to put your best foot forward and think that this person could not possibly be capable of doing something like this. Is there anything that she can do at the end of the day here, kind of to what Robin's question was, to try and sway this jury? Reasonable doubt is all they have to get to. How do they get to reasonable doubt here if she doesn't take the stand?
I think they need to engage in some character rehabilitation if they can, if they have the witnesses to do that, to sort of even the scales, to say, hey, look, you heard one side of things. Now you're going to hear the whole story. And so that's one approach. In addition to that, they don't have a legal burden to do this, but they have a practical burden to put forth some reasonable alternative explanation that is not just speculation, that isn't just, he could have died from an overdose. Well, what evidence there to support that? Yeah. And I'll be interested to see what they put forth in terms of prior substance use, if that happened and if the judge allows it. And then also just sort of really muddying up the waters in terms of the substance itself and what actually killed this guy. If you're going to condemn this woman with a scarlet letter for a murder conviction, you better be damn well sure how they died and from where they got it. And the prosecution can't tell you that.
And the investigation was crap. I mean, the thing is, we're in a world here where two things can certainly be true. She can be a murderer and you can have a really horrible investigation. It happens all the time. But certainly the defense is going to lean heavily on all of the hiccups and all the missteps in this investigation. Is that going to be enough at the end of the day to sway a jury?
In addition to arguing that, hey, there's this confusion around the type of substance that caused the death and from where it was procured and by whom, on top of that, you have the government, who has unlimited resources, putting their finger on the scales of justice by intimidating their own witnesses and ensuring that their witnesses get up there and say what this government wants them to say to condemn Corey Richens and also just let off these other admitted criminals, either scot-free or with substantial immunity. Is this fair? Is this how you think a homicide trial should go? Is this something that you can place enough faith in to condemn a person for the rest of their life? I think they got to hit all angles, and the shitty investigation is a part of it.
Robin, I'll give you the last word here. You were making a point. Why didn't you?
I know. I'm so sorry. Yeah. We lost internet at our house. Okay. It just blipped on us. We're in the middle of a snowstorm in July, it feels like. What was I saying, Tony?
you were talking about the character, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, it's important to remember, I think, when we're talking about Corey, to realize that people like her that are so adept at manipulation, to have lifetime of reps, that, there's a lot of victims in this, and victims aren't necessarily people that are weak of character, weak of mind, or easily duped. It's just that people like Corey are so toxic manipulators that they can find these levers of influence over you and wield them very, very effectively. So I want to make sure that, we're not shaming anyone for falling into her trap.
No.
Because she's just got a lot of crazy going on.
Yeah. She's one of those folks. And you look back and go, how? Well, they're out there. Yeah, they are out there. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always, thank you so much for your insight on this case. Robin Drake, as always, thank you for your insight on this case. Your thoughts in the comment section, we'd love to see them. Substack and YouTube, the two places you can do just that. We'll continue our conversation there. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you are getting podcasts, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage and this and the many cases we got for you right here. All right, we'll continue the conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.